The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, good morning, everyone. A brand new week. Welcome. And it's absolutely gorgeous out there. A little crisp and cold. We had a little bit of a freeze overnight. So if you didn't cover up your petunias, you may have a surprise. But anyway, good morning, everyone, and welcome. Good to have you along. I'm Peter Christian. Mr. Nick Christensen over there taking your phone calls this morning. And we do have a special guest in studio right now. Chris Slater is with Keys to Progress. And first of all, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much to both of you for having me on this today to promote the program.
You bet. Tell us about Keys to Progress. What's it all about?
Yeah, so Keys to Progress is a organization started in partnership with Progressive Auto Insurance and Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And the idea is that we want to provide vehicles to veterans in need of transportation. So nationally, since the program started in 2013, we've given away over 1,200 vehicles. And our goal this year in Montana is to give away two vehicles to a veteran in need of transportation.
So one would think people would be banging on your doors to say, hey, there's a veteran in my family, needs a car. How's it going?
Yeah, and so that's been exactly our struggle is that, and that's why I'm here today. And again, I can't thank you guys enough for having me
it's
on.
It's our pleasure.
Is that we've really struggled with applications in Montana. So I'm not sure if it's people unwilling to ask for help or what's going on with there, but I'm really just trying to get the word out so that we can drive those applications in and hopefully give those two cars away this year.
So tell us about the cars. I mean, do they come from Progressive or what? How does that?
So Progressive purchases the vehicles, but they do come out of the enterprise fleet.
Right. Okay.
And we do try and match the vehicle with the needs of the particular recipient.
Sure.
So if they need a truck or, you know, a compact car for commuting or an SUV, we do try and match the vehicle with those needs.
So now this is not you keep it for 2 weeks and you have to give it back. This is you're giving these vehicles to the individuals.
That's right. It's yours for life. It goes into your name. We pay the registration fees. We pay the title transfer fees. You get 6 months of insurance and a year of registration that comes with that. And we also tend to, you know, we have a big organization in Montana as far as Progressive goes, and we tend to put together an Amazon wish list and make sure they get hooked up with all the goodies that go along with getting a new vehicle.
All right. And so what's the procedure? What do we do?
Sure.
Who's eligible and how do they apply?
Okay. So applications are currently open, and the application window is open through August 7th.
Okay.
And then the giveaway is going to be November 9th. So it's veterans, active military E4 or below, and Gold Star families are eligible to apply.
Wow.
You do have to be within 250% of the federal poverty level. So there is some income, verification that goes along with that. But,
right.
I mean, that amount covers a good number of people in Montana. So applications are received through emailing keys2progress@progressive.com.
Mm-hmm.
Applicants will need a qualified sponsor. So that's going to be any sort of nonprofit organization that aids veterans, whether
sure.
that's the VA or whatever may be out there. And then you submit the application and you'll receive notification sometime after that August 7th timeline.
That's almost too good to be true. For the people who had their boots on the ground defending our country, it also either here or across, overseas, this is a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, and that really puts a good marker on what the goal is of the program. We want to provide independence to those who protected us. So I think you put a pretty good button on what we're trying to accomplish here.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation when we come back from the break, but we would love to have you give us a call, maybe ask a question or two of Chris Slater, who's with Keys to Progress. The Veteran Vehicle Giveaway Program is what we're talking about today. And the phone lines are open at area code 406. 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And imagine that. Who wouldn't want, especially if you've got a veteran in your family, who would not want to take advantage of that program? Sounds wonderful. So we're going to come right back after a quick timeout and hopefully get your phone calls to talk with Chris and about the program and the Veteran Vehicle Giveaway for Keys to Progress. We're going to come right back after this.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather, starting out the week here with widespread frost in the early morning hours, especially in the higher valleys of western Montana, as lows will drop to right around freezing. That will be amplified by calm conditions with little if any breeze. Cooler during the day, too, with highs in the low to mid-60s under mostly sunny skies. Clouds expected to arrive later Tuesday with a 30% chance of rain Wednesday morning. We'll see some sun later Wednesday with a mix of sun and cloud by Thursday, and highs returning to the low 70s.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because when people are fed, futures are nourished. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Oh, yeah. Hey, welcome back to Talk Back on this Monday, May 18th. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Chris Slater is joining us here in the studio with the Keys to Progress Veterans Vehicle Giveaway. We're just talking a little bit about my late brother. He passed away several years ago, but he was a veteran, and he in some ways was down on his luck. And this would have been a wonderful program for him.
Yeah, you know, it's really, unfortunately, a common story. And to not have a vehicle in Montana particularly really puts you at a hardship. I mean, making appointments, getting to work, doing those day-to-day needs, you need to have a vehicle. I mean, I know we have a good public transportation system, but without that independence and ability to get the things you need to get done, it can be really hard on life.
And especially for someone who's gone to the trouble to put their life on hold and serve their country for 4-8, however many years of their enlistment, or even if they were drafted, right? The whole idea is giving back to somebody who's already given to the country.
Precisely. And to help those who have served our country and put their lives on the line, and given the time to protect all of us, to try and give them something back like that's really important.
Well, we do have Jeff standing by to visit with you. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Chris Slater. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Peter. Good morning, Chris. Good morning, all. You don't have a draft, Peter.
I know. A long time ago. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. We're that way. Chris, I'm a vet and in favor of all things veteran, but sometimes there's unintended consequences. And I just looked at the federal poverty level, and 2.5 times the current poverty level is about around $40,000 for a single person, and right around $55,000 for a married couple. And my concern is that there are costs that come along with a car: insurance, gasoline, maintenance, and that sort of thing. And just giving a car to a person is fine, but if they don't have the means or the discipline to go out there and budget accordingly for this, it could end up being as much of a curse as a blessing. I'm wondering what you do about that.
So I would say that we do provide insurance for the first 6 months and the first year of registration. I would advise that sort of maintenance and upkeep of the vehicle does sort of fall on the responsibility of the recipient. But you know, the benefit of having the vehicle would probably outweigh those considerations. And I think that's, you know, a consideration for anyone with a vehicle. It is getting more expensive to maintain a vehicle, and gas prices are going up. So I certainly understand where you're coming from with that. But as far as the sort of long-term care of the vehicle, that does fall on the recipient.
Right, as it should. My concern is that a lot of the veterans, again, as a vet, I know this very well, a lot of vets suffer from mental illness and alcoholism, drug dependencies, different things. And that's my concern, that they don't have the wherewithal or the discipline or the support structure to make sure that this won't remain a blessing to them. And I was just wondering if you have any sort of ongoing support from your agency or other agencies that can help them make sure they succeed, I guess.
You know, it's kind of a tough question. I think these are problems that They're true of veterans. They're true of anyone driving down the road and walking down the street. And I know there are veteran assistance programs, and I certainly hear where you're coming from. It, you know, getting a vehicle can certainly be a major expense at times, but, you know, we're going to assume the best out of people, and we're going to hope for the best for them as they continue to thrive with a new vehicle and hope to support at least that front of their lives. We want to tend to the parts of the garden that we can touch, and
right.
If we can give a vehicle, that's what we want to do.
Can you talk about some of the recipients that you've had in the past? Because I know you have some great stories to share.
You
there.
Bet.
Yeah, so our first year, the vehicle wound up going to a, it's called Quiet Waters Ranch, operating out of Bozeman. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but they operate a ranch that sort of helped get veterans back on their feet by reconnecting with nature. So they organize hunting trips, they organize fishing trips.
I've heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great program, and we wound up providing them with like a passenger van so that they could take the people on their ranch out to fishing outings or private events or hunting outings, and it's really worked out very well for them.
Well, yeah, that sounds like – now, is this just a Montana program or is this a nationwide program?
So this is a nationwide program. Right. You know, I'm here on behalf of our sort of Montana organization. There's about 12 of us working together to get this thing going.
Okay.
We do put together an event to give the vehicle away, so there's quite a bit that goes into it. And we're all sort of boots on the ground across Montana, knocking on doors and talking to different organizations.
And so what is the procedure? Obviously, you want people to sign up for this. So
yeah.
What do they do? Where do they go?
So I would say the best course to find information would be to just plug Keys to Progress into Google or whatever your favorite search engine is, and there you can find the rules for applying and everything that goes into it. Easiest way to get an application going is to email keystoprogress@progressive.com, and they'll send you back the application form, which should also include the rules for applying and the application form itself, where you'll submit all the documentation that's needed, and then they take it from there at the national level. So we don't actually choose here in Montana who gets the vehicle.
Okay.
It goes to a national organization, and then, you know, they let us know, hey, we got our winner. Start planning your party.
So how long has this been going on now?
So this started in 2013. So what's that put us at 13 years mm-hmm, now?
Right.
Montana, I want to say we're in our fourth or fifth year here. And we've only been successful in giving away two vehicles.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that blows my mind.
It's been a real struggle to get applicants for us. And so we're pushing hard on the streets, but again, we're so thankful to have you guys here to get us out to some more years and try and drive some applications.
And for relatives and friends and neighbors of veterans out there, and you know that veteran needs a car, this is an opportunity to hook them up with you and say, hey, guess what? This is free, free, free.
Yeah. And if you're working in one of those organizations that supports veterans, I'm sure you have people in mind who you know who could apply for this program. And you can request that application. Friends and family can request that application. I will say if you're an immediate family member of Progressive or Enterprise Rent-A-Car,
right.
You are excluded from the program,
sure,
you know, just to keep everything above board. But,
of course.
But if you know someone who's in need, hit that keystoprogress@progressive.com email address and get that application going, because it's really a great program, and we'd love to see a couple of cars landing here in Montana.
We're going to come right back with more and with Chris Slater after this quick timeout. 406-721-1290 is our number.
Life is full of moments, from first steps, first loves, moments that make life special. A life can also bring us difficult and disruptive moments like a cancer diagnosis, which is why the groundbreaking work of Stand Up to Cancer is so vital. They know the problem of cancer won't be solved by one doctor, one lab, or one hospital. It takes collaboration. That's why Stand Up to Cancer brings together top minds from different fields to find new and better treatments so patients can thrive. So when it matters, we can all show up for moments of a lifetime. Please join Stand Up to Cancer and Myrtle Beach to help families get back to where they belong, making new memories for years to come. Please go to standuptocancer.org to see how you and join the mission.
Listen, retirement is the long game. We can't play about our future or our finances. Let's put ourselves in the right position.
Start building your retirement plan at thisisfreetirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Talk back underway on this Monday, May 18th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Our guest in the studio this morning is Chris Slater, representing Progressive and the Keys to Progress Veteran Vehicle Giveaway. And it's important for people to know this is a real giveaway. This is not, there's not something that you have to buy or whatever. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, application process is free. And, you know, I'm not here looking for donations. I'm here trying to get the word out so that we can get some people to apply. We'll be giving away at least 100 vehicles, nationally with a goal of 2 here in Montana. We do have a program that is occasionally giving away commercial vehicles. So it's a great program. Couldn't encourage you to apply enough if you think you could benefit from this program or you know someone in need. Keys to Progress at progressive.com gets that application coming your way, and it's as easy as we can make it.
I would imagine the whole idea of a free vehicle sometimes can raise, wait, hold on, what's going on here? But this is absolutely straight above board.
Absolutely above board. It's a quality vehicle. You know, we inspect it. We make sure it's good to go. It's a low miles vehicle that comes out of the Enterprise fleet. They take good care of their vehicles. And it's a legitimate program here. We're not farming out your information or, you know, looking to scam in any way. This is a legit above board program to give a veteran a vehicle.
And I'm really glad this is happening in Montana because Montana has a very high percentage, one of the highest in the country, of veterans. And not just, you know, able-bodied, but disabled, you name it.
Yeah, we've got a huge population of veterans here, and it's really important that we look to support it. And I'm so glad there's opportunities like this to help our veteran community and help them thrive here in Montana.
So what is it like when you get an application and you have the opportunity to meet them, meet their family, and have the keys, drop it in their hand, and watch them drive away?
Oh, it's so much fun. We put together, We try to have a party to recognize and honor the people. If it's something that you're not comfortable with, it's not something that we have to do. We can certainly make this a private event. But that moment when you hand the keys over is absolutely special. And for all the people that go into making it work and come together, we all just – it'll bring a tear to your eye at the moment that it happens.
And I would imagine that not just family, but extended family, neighbors, coworkers, things like that, that would be an event. Hey, this is happening 2 weeks from today for our family. We want you to come join us. This is a wonderful celebration for us.
Yeah, it's as big or as low-key of a celebration as you need. Not everyone's into having a party or making a spectacle of it, but we do try. We cater it. We have a tent. We hold it somewhere public, and It's something to be excited about and to celebrate. So we try and make that an opportunity.
Well, it isn't often that you get a free car. I mean,
it's a really a special program. Yeah. And so, you know, just getting the word out, get your applications in, keys to progress at progressive.com. I can't say it enough.
Wow.
Take advantage of this opportunity if you think you're eligible or know someone who does.
So now for you personally, what does this program do for you? Obviously you represent Progressive, but, you're right in the middle of the mechanics of getting this whole thing going.
Yeah. So I'm co-chair of the committee. Our chair, Raquel Collins, wasn't able to make it in today.
Okay.
Just to work together to help people. I love helping people. I love helping our veteran community. So this is just a fantastic opportunity to sort of partner with my work opportunities and get help out and do something to help people. That's so important in life, to help people.
Are there any age limitations, things like that? Just have to have a valid driver's license.
Yeah, you got to have a valid driver's license. You got to be able to have a clean driving record, free of major infractions. So, you know, the odd speeding ticket things that come up aren't a major one. But if you've got, you know, negligent or potentially under the influence claims, that might preclude you from application. yeah, valid driver's license, 18 plus, and then there's no upper limit. So if you're in need and you hit those categories, do apply.
Fantastic. So tell us a little bit about Progressive itself. Obviously, we see the commercials, we see all the things that they do, but this is a very special, very limited program.
Yeah, so Progressive, we try, and as much as we're sponsoring it, we like to keep it separate. Keys to Progress is its own entity.
Right.
It does preliminarily or primarily pull from Progressive employees to get the things going. But it is something that Progressive takes a backseat, and Keys to Progress is the forefront here. It's about giving the vehicle to the veteran. We do have a rather large team here in Montana. We don't have a main office, but there's a good number of us working, and a good portion of that team is here trying to support the veteran community.
And not only that, I think I mentioned this earlier, but Montana has a very high percentage of veterans, one of the highest in the country. And I would think this would be a wonderful idea if you have a friend who's a veteran or a family member who's a veteran. Hey, get on the phones. Hey, guess what Progressive's doing right now?
Yeah, we're giving a vehicle away if we need one. So that just gets back to where it's so surprising what a challenge it's been for us to get these applications driven in. We didn't meet our goal last year. We were unable to give a vehicle away.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, pardon me. We're really pushing hard to get, for sure, one with a goal of two vehicles given away this year.
Let's get some contact information out before we run out of time here.
Sure. KeysToProgress@Progressive.com is going to be your best way to get information in your application. Definitely search up Keys to Progress on Google. If you want to contact me for more information, it's going to be Chris_J_Slater@Progressive.com. And I'm certainly able to help you and answer questions and can guide you through the process as best as I can.
It's been a delight getting to know you. Thanks for coming in, and best of luck with the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, guys. You guys have a great day.
You bet. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be the Talk Back Book Club. So stay with us. That's coming up here in just a few minutes right here on Talk Back. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this quick timeout.
In a world of complicated...
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather, starting out the week here with widespread frost in the early morning hours, especially in the higher valleys of western Montana, as lows will drop to right around freezing. That will be amplified by calm conditions with little if any breeze. Cooler during the day, too, with highs in the low to mid-60s under mostly sunny skies. Clouds expected to arrive later Tuesday with a 30% chance of rain Wednesday morning. We'll see some sun later Wednesday with a mix of sun and cloud by Thursday, and highs returning to the low 70s.
Every weekend, Diane Beck and Becky Peters and the Beck and Beck team at Windermere Real Estate present Missoula Real Estate Today on News Talk KGVO. The Beck and Beck team provides years of local experience for your real estate transaction and bring you guests that provide useful information on products and services available in our community on Missoula Real Estate Today. Saturday mornings from 8 till 8:30 and replayed Sunday mornings from 10:30 till 11 on News Talk KGVO, FM 98.3 and AM 1290, and on the free KGVO mobile app.
When I was diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma, I didn't know it was a blood cancer. It's one of more than 100 different types, and they're all treated differently, and the symptoms can look like other things, so it could be hard to diagnose. I had a fever for weeks. I was so tired all the time, and I didn't feel like eating. This can feel scary, but if you know what to look for, you'll know what to tell your doctor. And you can get in touch with Blood Cancer United. They were there for me, and they can be there for you, too.
Go to bloodcancerunited.org to learn more.
Well, two out of three of us are oldies but goodies. Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along. The KGVO Book Club is underway, the Talk Back Book Club. Joining us on the phone right now, Dr. Mirdad Kia. Good morning, Doctor. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Nick. Thank you very much for having us once again. It's really a true pleasure.
And, of course, Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio.
Morning. We may as well get started because this is a
big topic. Please do.
First of all, for those who are tuning in for the first time, this is the first time we've done this statewide. Every month we have a discussion of a book. We spend 90 minutes talking about a book of some either topical or relevant subject. And we encourage people to read along with us. And we also encourage people to call in and participate with us. And today's book is a biography of Hannah Arendt, who was one of the most important intellectuals of the 20th century, a political philosopher, who was one of the she was actually a German immigre. She was born and raised in Germany, educated in Germany, and fled the Nazis and wound up eventually in the United States, where she taught at a number of schools, including Berkeley, Princeton, Columbia.
Wow.
She was an amazing figure, and she dealt with in the post-war period, especially a subject that dominated intellectual discourse in the West, and particularly, I guess, in the United States, which was the relationship between the individual and the collective, the individual and society. The intellectuals of the 40s and 50s had seen the rise and fall of one of the great monstrosities of the 20th century, Hitler's Germany, and the rise and not yet the fall of Stalin's Soviet Union. And they did what intellectuals do, which is try to explain the world in a way that made sense to people who had lived through a similar experience.
And in some cases got themselves killed, right?
Yeah, in a number of cases, in one way or another. And I mean, if you look around, you look at the sociology of Riesman and White and Glaser, and you look at the theology of Reinhold Niebuhr. And remember, we did one of Niebuhr's books in one of the earliest programs on this show. They all dealt with that larger issue. The same thing's true with the literature. John Updike, J.D. Salinger, all dealt with the appropriate relationship between the individual and the collective, and, you know, what claims did the individual have on the mass, and what claims did the mass have on the individual. And in this case, we're talking about this biography by Samantha Rose Hill, who did her PhD at UMass Amherst. She teaches at the Brooklyn Institute for Social Research, and she's the assistant director of the Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities. She's also edited a book of Hannah Arendt's poetry, which most of us didn't know anything about until not a few years back, I guess starting in the 90s. And this book is a short account of her life and her work and her major ideas. And these are the ideas of one of the great thinkers of the 20th century. And I said, as we first announced this book last month, that this was someone who really fits the bill for a genius, but she was also kind of a crackpot. I mean, when you're really that bright, when you're wrong, you can be spectacularly wrong. But she was never stupid. I mean, she was always brilliant, even when she was wrong. And so we'll be talking about the book. This book.
She was wrong, but you made it look good.
Well, more than that, there was some serious stuff. I mean, the book *Eichmann in Jerusalem*, which we'll talk about later in the program.
Okay.
She got completely wrong in many respects, and yet there was still a core of brilliance there and something of real substance. So we'll be talking about this biography of her and also her main works.
Mirdad, we got about a minute. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, very briefly, this is one of the most fascinating and one of the most influential intellectuals of the 20th century. Her works have impacted a large number of thinkers in this country, in Europe, on both on the left and the right. And just looking at the teachers with whom she studied this, these are maybe just names to a lot of our listeners, but Martin Heidegger, Edmund Husserl, Carl Jaspers, you know, these are big names, especially in terms of German political philosophy. And she worked with all of them, and she brought the continental philosophy, the political philosophy that was prevalent in the 1930s and 40s to the shores of United States, and she became a transitional.
We are up against a break. We're going to come right back and hopefully take your phone calls. So please stay with us.
Hello?
Don't be fooled.
Life is full of moments, from first steps, first loves, moments that make life special. Now, life can also bring us difficult and disruptive moments like a cancer diagnosis, which is why the groundbreaking work of Stand Up to Cancer is so vital. They know the problem of cancer won't be solved by one doctor, one lab, or one hospital. It takes collaboration. That's why Stand Up to Cancer brings together top minds from different fields to find new and better treatments so patients can thrive. So when it matters, we can all show up for moments of a lifetime. Please join Stand Up to Cancer and Myrtle Beach to help families get back to where they belong, making new memories for years to come. Please go to standuptocancer.org to see how you can join the mission.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of Talk Back. Yes, is the Talk Back Book Club underway right now. University of Montana Professor Mirdad Kia on the phone. University of Montana Professor Emeritus Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio this morning. The book is called Hannah Arendt by Samantha Rose Hill. And we already have a caller on the line. Let's get Helena on. Helena, good morning. What's on your mind, please?
Oh, good morning. I'm curious to know what your guests think, given that the woman, Hannah Arendt, lived through so many momentous events in the 20th century, what they see as the relevance of examining her life today. What are there particular things we can learn from her and from her life?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I think there's probably a number of things that you could learn from her life, which was amazing, as Mirdad mentioned, that she studied with three of the greatest, maybe the three greatest German philosophers of the 20th century. One of whom, Martin Heidegger, was an especially important philosopher long after his death. He also was a Nazi, and later on, but ironically, Hannah Arendt, who was Jewish, had an affair with him. He wasn't yet a Nazi. Hitler hadn't come to power when she was a student of his. And she was a very young student. When this came to light a number of years ago, one of the things that astonished me most was not that a Jewish student had an affair with a future Nazi professor, but that she'd once been young. I mean, she was old my entire life. Right. And the idea that she was a very young woman at one point was a shock, I guess. But that alone is one of the most striking things. This is why history is so wonderful, because if you wrote that in a novel, the editor would make you take it out. Say, that's ridiculous. It's not really. It's just far-fetched. But in fact, it happened. And when he became the rector of Freiburg, under Hitler, he fired all the Jewish faculty and so on. And Hannah Arendt broke it off with him. But they resumed a relationship, not a necessarily a physical relationship, but a contact after the war. But they didn't speak for a number of years after that. That's a fascinating story. But I think it's really her work that's most relevant today. And I know we've got another caller, but I want to just start talking about one of the monumental works of the 20th century, which is the origins of totalitarianism, one of the great questions of the 20th century. And I mean, this book is just a graduate by itself, a graduate education in Western history and in and philosophy, and it's really a systematic attempt to understand the rise of a totalitarianism, and it really is breathtaking in its scope and its learning. For Hannah Arendt, totalitarianism was an entirely new phenomenon. It was something without precedent. And so the title of the book is really kind of misleading because there are no origins in that sense. And yet she found antecedents, as she called them, in European anti-Semitism and in European imperialism of the 19th century, particularly the metastasis of traditional Jew hatred in Europe for a new race-based Jew hatred that emerged in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, and related that to imperialism and to the eventual collapse of the nation state. And the book is divided into three parts. She calls them three books. First part is anti-Semitism. The second part is imperialism, and the third part is totalitarianism, which tries to describe and understand the evolution of this new phenomena in the world. What is totalitarianism? And for her, one of the essential elements of totalitarianism that distinguishes it from earlier forms of tyranny, dictatorship, authoritarianism, monarchy even, was the use of terror, not only the use of terror to come to power, but to sustain power, and the destruction of all intermediary institutions, school, unions,
wow,
family even, and the connection of the individual directly to the party state, you know, the emergence of the party over the state and the direct control, both physical and intellectual, of the party state over the individual. And it's a stunning and absolutely brilliant analysis. She, for one thing, said essentially that Hitler's Germany and Stalin's Soviet Union were different manifestations of the same thing, totalitarianism. And that shocked a lot of people, including a lot of her friends on the left, who saw, even with Stalin, as maybe was a bad guy, but the, you know, Soviet Union was some sort of utopian dream. But for Hannah Arendt, it was something else entirely.
Mirdad, we've got about 2 minutes, sir.
Yeah, so, I mean, as Mike mentioned absolutely correctly, the origins of totalitarianism, which was apparently published in 1951, basically examines the roots of Nazism and Stalinism, and within the categories of anti-Semitism, imperialism, totalitarianism. And it's a fascinating, and I have to say, disturbing study of the rise of a new political system, as far as she saw it, which was very different from anything that the world and Europe had especially had experienced. And I think she wanted to get to the bottom of what had happened in Europe, especially, for example, with the Holocaust and the catastrophe that it was in terms of its destructive and genocidal dimensions. And I think what happens in this study, which is quite astonishing in terms of its impact, is for the first time she actually looks very critically at the history of Europe and tries to search the roots, to identify the roots and the causes of the rise of Hitler and Stalin and the rest. And so it's in a way it's a self-examination of Europe in a very analytical and historical fashion.
And with that, we're coming up against another break, and we have Ben waiting on the line when we come back from the break. Our phone numbers, by the way, are 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Talk Back. And again, it's the Talk Back Book Club, which will continue when we return right after this. Hey, it's Peter Chris. Hey, we're back on the Monday edition of Talk Back, Monday, May 18th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christians, and taking your phone calls. In case you're just joining us, this is the Talk Back Book Club. Our University of Montana professor, Mirdad Kia, joining us on the phone. Professor Emeritus Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio. And the book is called Hannah Arendt by Samantha Rose Hill. So Ben has been waiting. Ben, good morning. You're on. Now, what's your question or comment?
Good morning. Yep. Thanks for discussing Hannah Arendt, one of the premier philosophers of the 20th century. When I was thinking about her work, I mean, one of her main points in The Origin of Totalitarianism is the destruction of the barrier between private and public life. And I think we see a lot of that phenomenon in today's society, especially with the growth of social media and this sort of having not only a impact on people's private lives, but it can also impact people's professional lives and their public lives, and sometimes to great detriment. I was just wondering if the professors would like to comment on that and what other lessons we can learn from Arendt in our times. Thank you.
Ben, thanks for the call. We got about 4.5 minutes, gentlemen. Yeah,
well, that's not all that much time to deal with what Ben just asked.
Yeah.
But he's right that that is an absolutely central part of her argument. And part of that is the emergence of what she calls ideology, which she defines as all-encompassing and all-explanatory. It was a distortion of lies, you know, the party line that was designed for her ideologies and the ideologies of totalitarianism, designed to, as she put it, reinterpret the past, understand the present, and predict the future. And in order to put that across to the population, a totalitarian government needs to isolate individuals from what she called the normal world. And the hierarchical structures of a totalitarian state would allow the government to convert what she called fantastic lies into, quote, acceptable and accepted opinions. And you see that. And I've mentioned, you know, I think on this program in the past that maybe the two best representations of what totalitarianism means in the movies would be that German film, The Lives of Others, which shows the government interposing itself even in the most intimate relationship between a man and a woman.
Wow.
And or Orwell's book 1984, where in the end, you know, when the lovers get together and they've both been put through torture essentially, and he says, she says I gave you up. He says, don't worry, I gave you up too. I mean, the government will interpose itself in the most human and intimate relationships. The other is a very dark comedy, The Death of Stalin, which also shows one scene in particular where the son rats out his father. And again, this was highly encouraged in the Soviet Union. Pavel Morozov was a Soviet hero number one, and or pioneer hero number one. And yet the father comes back eventually, and then as the father is reintroduced into the home, there's just in the movie this glance between the son and father, and you know it's very arch, and that it doesn't do anything with it. But the sense that the state permeates everything,
right?
To the information people have, the way people think, and it corrupts everything from you know the relationship to politics down to human relationships.
We got about 2 minutes left in this segment, but do we have any idea how fortunate we are to live in a country? Yes, we have troubles, but not like that.
Yeah, we do, and I think you see the drift toward control of ideas and so on. In Europe, we've talked on this show and on the hotspots a number of times about the drift away from freedom of expression in Europe, particularly in the Anglophone countries, in, you know, the English-speaking countries. And it's very alarming.
Mirdad, got about a minute.
Yeah, I think because we just have a minute, I'd rather wait until we come back.
Okay.
There are two points I want to bring up. One, applying, Arendt to the experience that I have actually confronted myself, not in this country, but outside, but also applying here to, as Ben's question suggests, to the world in which we live, though we do not want to believe that there are tendencies toward totalitarianism, I do believe that we do have it, even in this country. And to some degree, in terms of the language we use and how we have to be careful in terms of the vocabulary and the grammar we utilize, because we are under constant watch, not only by the government, but by the society itself, which has internalized some of these issues and acts almost like a police in terms of a language police, in terms of what we say, what we should say, and what we shouldn't.
Well, we're coming up against a hard break, top of the hour break, and we'll continue. We have another hour of the Talkback Book Club coming up. We hope that you'll take advantage of it and give us a call, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We're going to come right back with more of the Talkback Book Club after the timeout.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along, where we are right in the middle of a great conversation with the Talk Back Book Club. Those of you statewide who are just joining us, we're having a great time discussing a fantastic book by Samantha Rose Hill called Hannah Arendt, about Hannah Arendt. And joining us here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer, and on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia, both from the University of Montana. Michael, it's all yours.
Yeah, well, for those who are just tuning in now, we, and especially for those statewide who are listening to this program for the first time, this is a 90-minute program where we discuss a single book for and the implications of that book for 90 minutes. And most of the books have are either a current interest or touch on issues related to current interest, not necessarily current events. As for example, today we're talking about Hannah Arendt, one of the great political philosophers of the 20th century. And her ideas certainly do have resonance today. And Mirdad wanted to talk a little bit about a question raised by Ben in the last half hour.
Mirdad, go ahead, please.
Yeah, since Ben brought up a key and central issue in terms of the relevance of Hannah Arendt, you know, it always reminds me whenever I have read anything by her in terms of you know, people always think it's abstract political theory or political philosophy. It isn't. It's actually unfolding in different corners of the world even today. I'm reminded of a revolution in 1979, which brought actually what she describes, a totalitarian regime. And that totalitarian regime introduced something fascinating. This is one aspect of totalitarianism, which she discusses in a different context. Of course, Europe and Nazi Germany and Stalinist Soviet Union. But, you know, this is also true today. So in 1980, the new Islamic regime in Iran introduced a concept, the visiting uncle. It's fascinating. So you had a figure whom you had to think about as a visiting uncle to your school system. Now, these are kids. These are basically kindergarten, elementary school, and so on and so forth. The school would tell them that a fictional uncle is actually visiting, and they would have to sit with this physical uncle and answer his questions. The questions were, what do your parents do? Do they dance at home? Do they drink, you know, alcohol, something that you think is different from, like, Coke or Pepsi? Do they make fun out of religion? Do they pray? So on and so forth. So what it was actually interrogation of children in a very devious fashion. In terms of children acting as spies and informants about the lifestyle inside their homes and what their parents did, and using the children as spies and informants who actually identified what the parents should not be doing at home, so the state can go and actually, you know, detain them or imprison them and whatever. This is, at one level, a very crude totalitarian style of controlling by bringing the most innocent, vulnerable members of a family and using them as informants and spies against their own family, against their own parents. That is the penetration of the state into the family structure.
We're coming up against the break. We're going to come right back. The Talk Back Book Club will continue. University of Montana Professor Mirdad Kia and Professor Emeritus Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio this morning. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls in a moment.
Cold and flu season.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather, starting out the week here with widespread frost in the early morning hours, especially in the higher valleys of western Montana, as lows will drop to right around freezing. That will be amplified by calm conditions with little if any breeze. Cooler during the day, too, with highs in the low to mid-60s under mostly sunny skies. Clouds expected to arrive later Tuesday with a 30% chance of rain Wednesday morning. We'll see some sun later Wednesday with a mix of sun and cloud by Thursday, and highs returning to the low 70s.
Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Talk Back. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. It's the Talk Back Book Club. Mirdad Kia, Michael Mayer, both professors at the University of Montana. And we have folks who have been waiting on the line to talk with you, gentlemen. And Rick is up first. Rick, go ahead, please.
Hey, gentlemen, this may be more of a sociology question than a question about politics, but does she ever talk about, like Alexander Solzhenitsyn would, about individuals, how they do things collectively that they would not normally do? And I want to bring up an incident where prior to the Second World War, Denmark was being occupied by Germany, and the Danish king, King Christian, found out that trains were coming to take the Jewish population and put them in gulags or
concentration camps.
Yeah, ghettos. And that whole population of Denmark, the Danes, they smuggled 7,000 Jews in 3 weeks across the water to Sweden. And they share a 45-mile border with Germany. So they have to be somewhat of the same mind. How can one society that has nothing to gain actually be so heroic and the other society be so unheroic?
Wow.
Speaking of the Germans, other than the fact that King Christian wasn't a raving lunatic murderer like Adolf Hitler was, but does she delve into that kind of question?
All right, thanks for the call.
And she does, and she thinks that part of the rise of totalitarianism, which, in fact, this is one of the purposes of terror was not just to frighten or coerce the population, but to destroy all traces of individuality and personal dignity and a sense of responsibility. But in a sense, this is exactly what totalitarian governments intend to do, and they intend to destroy all intermediary institutions and to destroy the individuality of the person. And the success of a totalitarian government is based in part on what Hannah Arendt called the large part of the population, the failure to be a person, to assert one's individuality. But Merdad wanted to touch on something.
Merdad,
about
go ahead,
that.
Please.
No. It was what I was saying in the previous segment, that I think that the brilliance of her analysis is that she basically examines how fear and terror becomes internalized, that you actually realize that you cannot speak your mind even in front of your own children, because they might have been recruited by the state as informants and spies. And you have to be careful in terms of how you behave, even at home around the dinner table, because the children have been recruited by the state as spies, as agents, and so on and so forth. That is, the fear has actually created, fractured the family structure. I mean, one of the purposes of totalitarianism is to penetrate as deep as the family, and in fact destroys any sense of trust and confidence within a family circle, because you don't know what a member of family might do to you and might in fact be an agent of the state. I have to say this, you know, we keep on speaking about it as if it is in the past, but I have to say this, I see this sense of fear and this sense of internalizing the fear. Am I saying the right thing? Am I saying the correct thing? Am I using the right vocabulary? Am I using the right grammar? And so on and so forth. Sort of penetrating our own sort of social media-based sort of culture. And this kind of imposition very gradually of certain language, certain quotes, certain words, certain vocabulary that we have to use, otherwise we are in trouble. And that's when, when I have to censor myself in case I might be unacceptable, or I might be criticized, or I might hurt my reputation, is the frightening part of, I think, what she's talking about.
I would imagine having spies within your own family would be the ultimate, where do I turn now? I have no one to talk to.
Well, exactly. And that's, I referred to Pavel Morozov, who was Stalin-made Soviet pioneer hero number one. The reason he did so was he ratted out his own father. And then his uncle, in retaliation, murdered him, and hence Stalin made him a hero. There's a statue of him in every Soviet village. This is heroism, to rat out your parents. And again, the imposition of the totalitarian regime into the most intimate of human relationships is one of the key characteristics.
Got about a minute and a half before the break. Merdad, if you want to go ahead, please.
I think in some ways we live in societies that have become actually more complicated and more advanced in terms of how this fear and self-censorship has come to our everyday life. Sometimes I actually experience it in some of my own classes. You know, students said, I'm not sure if I should say this. I'm not. Yeah. I mean, that's a very alarming sort of thing. Why are you worried about saying this? Because I might not sound correct. I don't know who sets up that correct discourse or language. But we are also dealing with it on a daily basis in this country as well.
We're going to come back. When we return, we have Jeff Nancy, George and Harry, all waiting to visit with you gentlemen for the Talk Back Book Club. Professor Mirdad Kia, Professor Emeritus Michael Mayer, Michael joining us in the studio. Professor Kia is joining us on the phone. And, of course, you are one of the most important parts of this conversation. We'll try to get as many calls in as we can when we return. Our number, 1-800-568-5309, or, of course, 406-721-1290. We look forward to hearing from you and more of Talk Back and, of course, the Talk Back Book Club as we return right after this quick timeout. So please, stay with us.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. It's been decades since Montana saw a new stretch of interstate open. That could change in the future if an unexpected bill gains traction in Congress. U.S. Senator John Cornyn of Texas and U.S. Senator Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming are floating the idea of converting the existing two-lane north-south corridor into a new stretch of freeway honoring President Trump. Cornyn and Lummis say the I-47 Future Interstate Act would rebrand U.S. Highway 287, but it so happens in Montana that would put a bustling four-lane road across some of Montana's most scenic and still remote corridors, including the Rocky Mountain Front and right through the heart of the Madison Valley. In a press release announcing what he unofficially calls the Trump Interstate, Cornyn says by upgrading one of our nation's longest highways to a future interstate, the legislation would increase economic growth and improve safety, all while honoring the most consequential president of our lifetime. Close quote. Last week, we told you how Montana had become one of only a handful of states to achieve a no-kill status as its animal shelters, with a full 95% of animals brought in shelters surviving and placed in adoption. Tracy Taylor reports another report is out now, placing the Treasure State among the best in the country for care of both wild and domestic animals, especially when it comes to veterinary care.
A new study ranks Montana among the most animal-friendly states in the country. Smile Hub placed Montana sixth overall, comparing all 50 states in areas including access to veterinarians, conservation programs, animal charities, and no-kill shelters. The report found Montana ranks second nationwide for veterinarians per pet-owning household and third for state conservation programs and initiatives. Researchers say the ranking reflects both strong pet care access and ongoing wildlife conservation efforts across the state. Tracy Taylor, Montana State News Network.
And the Missoula City Council poised to take action tonight on that $100 million deal with Miramonte Companies that will bring a major housing development to the area near Southgate Mall. This is the Montana State News Network.
As a parent, you said you'd never give up the convertible.
Look, the van even has its own vacuum.
You said you'd never stop listening to your music.
Do your happy dance, do your happy dance, yeah.
That's right.
You said you'd never schedule your life around a stuffed animal.
Nobody panic. Bun Bun is still at daycare.
You said you'd never give in to demands.
Two kids meals. And a chocolate shake.
And never put them in harm's way.
I'll be right back, little man. Just gonna pop in the store for diapers.
But never happens. And no amount of time is okay to leave your child in a car by themselves.
Long line today.
Temperatures as low as 60 degrees can be deadly for children left behind. So always bring them with you every time you park the car. Stop. Look. Lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back and the Talk Back Book Club rolling right along this morning. Dr. Mirdad Kia on the phone, Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio. And let's get Jeff on. He's been waiting the longest. Jeff, go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Michael. Good morning, Mirdad. Good morning, Montana, again. Your guys' discussion has caused me to look at totalitarianism with fresh eyes, and it's from this perspective that the great and brilliant neuropsychiatrist Ian McGilchrist has said something that I've suspected all along, and maybe it's confirmation bias on my part, but that everything in the world that matters is relationship. That when you look at it, it's all, excuse me, frog in my throat. It's all about relationship, and they're from the atomic level all the way up to the universe. It's molecules, atoms, people, planets, all that. And it just struck me this morning that what totalitarianism does is it destroys relationship between parent and child, between wife and husband, between families, between friends. It destroys it all and tries to replace all those relationships with one relationship, and that's a relationship with the state. But here's the really evil part of that, is that relationships can only happen between people, not between entities. And so you cannot have a relationship with the state. You can be a subject of the state, but it's a delusion to think that you have a relationship. And yet that's what totalitarianism does. At least that's how I saw it in the descriptions. And I was wondering if you'd like to talk about that, because to me that seems the key to the whole thing is it stops people. You said it in a different way, but it stops people from being human because they can no longer relate to one another, and all they can do is have this delusional relationship with the state.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Thanks, because Jeff. Hannah Arendt made a very similar point. If you look at her dissertation, which was later published as Love and St. Augustine, it's about exactly what Jeff was saying. And much of her career, she wrote about relationships. And again, the purpose of a totalitarian state is to deny people access to what she or to create what she called the failure to be a person. And it's defined by relationships.
All right, let's get another call in. This is Nancy. Nancy, good morning. You're on Talkback on the Talkback Book Club. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Glory. And one of my favorite philosophers is Hubert Reeves, a French-Canadian astronomer, philosopher. And one of the quotes that he is known for is, the distance between your dreams and reality is called discipline. And I think that our Miss Hannah realized this. She learned this the hard way, that the state does come between our human beings' dreams and interferes with reality. And she herself, I think, abused discipline in order to enjoy freedoms, especially when she was in the United States, a type of a woman that would go into an ice cream parlor craving her favorite flavor and ending up ordering and eating a banana split. And I think that she explored life to its fullest, including having an affair with a Nazi. I think she did that on purpose in order to get his insight. He was like a learning tool for her. And she must have been an exciting woman. I'm sorry I never got a chance to meet her. But other than that, I'd like to know your thoughts on my theory. And thank you so much, doctors. It's always good to talk with you.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling. It's important to remember that Heidegger had not yet, I mean, his work and his own personal flirtation with Nazism had sort of begun, but he had not yet become a Nazi at that point. And the relationship between Heidegger and Hannah Arendt, which is only, a fairly short number of years, has been the subject of many, many books and much speculation, and no one will ever know the relationship between the two people. But it's very clear that she was she admired his work and she loved him, and he also loved her. It's hard to know exactly what that means, but it was an intense personal relationship. There are letters that clearly reveal that. There's a sense of betrayal when he took over Freiburg, became the rector of Freiburg, fired all the Jewish faculty, and Hannah Arendt wrote him a fairly curt note, and he wrote kind of a defensive response. Human relationships are hard to explain. But one of the most interesting things, and this relationship explains something that had always puzzled me, which is that when at the end of World War II, when they were looking to denazify Germany and they were looking to create a new Germany, Heidegger was banned from teaching at German universities. And even Carl Jaspers, an old friend, agreed with that. But Hannah Arendt kind of defended him. And I never understood that. And then when this came out, you know, First Love and the continuing hold of her first love, obviously had something to do with it. And eventually he was readmitted to German universities.
We're going to come right back. We still have another half an hour to go with the Talk Back Book Club. And the book, again, is called Hannah Arendt by Samantha Rose Hill. And we'd love to have your comments at 406-721-1290. We'll be right back after this quick timeout on this Monday edition of Talk Back. Hey, my friend.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Small businesses are the heart of America. Like you, these entrepreneurs started out with a dream and the drive to build a better life. If you have a small business idea to grow or challenge to face, you don't have to go it alone. Since 1964, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. Today, they are the nation's largest nonprofit source of expert mentoring, resources, and education. Whether you're starting out, building back, or have worked at it for years, SCORE will match you with specialized mentors. Our thousands of volunteers provide the guidance and connections you need for free. Your success is waiting. SCORE is ready to help. Find a mentor today at score.org.
We are back. This is Talk Back, the Talk Back Book Club, rolling right along. And Dr. Mirdad Kia, you had something you wanted to say right during the break. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, building on what Mike said, but also a great question and comment by Nancy. Very interesting. First of all, when Hannah Arendt had her relationship, a sexual relationship, intimate relationship with Martin Heidegger, professor, mentor, and so on and so forth. Heidegger had not become a Nazi yet. The Nazi, sort of the pro-Nazi sentiments came after, rise of Hitler and the Nazis basically taking over and consolidating their power at every university and institution. But it is what makes Arendt so convincing is that after the war, when Heidegger was prohibited from teaching, though she opposed him, though she was appalled by his pro-Nazi statements when Hitler was in power, she actually favored and advocated Heidegger to be reinstated and to be allowed to teach, because Heidegger had a brilliant career and was a superb philosopher. And the solution to Heidegger's Nazi orientation when Hitler was in power was not censorship, was to actually challenge him and to question him. and to confront him in terms of what he had done. This is what I really admire about Hannah Arendt. That is, instead of constantly silencing what we don't like, the voices we don't like, disturbing voices, and voices that are appalling, basically, because how more appalling can one be than to support a genocidal maniac like Hitler, but at the same time, allowing that space and that time to actually for him to speak, but also to question him, to challenge him, and use that opportunity to enlighten, educate, and inform the public about the evils of Nazism, about the evil of an intellectual at the level of Heidegger changing positions so easily and justifying a monstrous totalitarian regime like Hitler's.
Let's go ahead and get Mark from Fort Benton. Mark, thanks for holding and thanks for calling this morning. What's on your mind, please? Hello, Mark.
Yes, hello.
Go ahead, please. You're on.
Oh, hi. Hey, Peter and the doctor. I'm enjoying your show this morning. Pardon me, especially about, this discussion about totalitarianism and families against each other or turning them into the establishment or government officials and stuff for not believing the government doctrine. And I'm thinking, God, we have right now a situation with a lot of my friends, I'm sure all over the country it's happening, where when somebody doesn't like the president or the conservative party and you want to discuss issues with them, they just say, no, if you like Trump, I don't even want to talk to you. And then they out-talk you or talk over loud or start screaming and you can't get any conversation in intelligently. And I'm wondering after this, not this current election, but the next election went presidential, and even if Vance or Mario or both get president, vice president, whichever, do you think this condition of the Democratic liberal mind is going to change and maybe be more tolerant of the conservative perspective or point of view or ideology?
All right. Good question. Gentlemen,
well, again, I think we have to be careful about theoretically, liberals would want to have that exchange. And we're talking about something to the left of that.
Right.
And it is unfortunate that you see a lot of that in this country. You see it in school systems. You see it in universities, as well as in the public sphere. And it is alarming. And I hate to say this, but I don't see it changing much. I don't know. What do you think, Mayor Dodd?
Yeah, no, I think, you know what I always get worried about? Mike and I have talked about it, is as soon as the discussion starts, instead of actually discussing the issues, you do not like a certain president, a certain leader, a certain government official. You know, what is wrong with actually discussing his or her ideas? What do you dislike in terms of what he or she has said or done? Why not talk about it, but instead labeling it fascist, you know,
We're up against the break. We're going to come right back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks.
No.
Every weekend, Diane Beck and Becky Peterson, the Beck and Beck team at Windermere Real Estate, present Missoula Real Estate Today on News Talk KGVO. The Beck and Beck team provides years of local experience for your real estate transaction and bring you guests that provide useful information on products and services available in our community on Missoula Real Estate Today. Saturday mornings from 8 till 8:30 and replayed Sunday mornings from 10:30 till 11 on News Talk KGVO, FM 98.3 and AM 1290 and on the free KGVO mobile app.
Now that I'm retired, I'm worried about making ends meet. Food, medicine, and rent cost more every day. And that's why I used BenefitsCheckup.org. It connected me to an extra $1,000 a month. BenefitsCheckup.org is a free service from the National Council on Aging. In a few clicks, older adults like me can see if they might qualify for money-saving programs. If you're on a fixed income, BenefitsCheckup.org might help you too. For free, visit today.
Supported by the U.S. Administration for Community Living.
We'll be right back.
It takes me back.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along this morning on this special edition of Talk Back. And again, it's the Talk Back Book Club. And Mirdad, you had some things you wanted to say before we take our next call, please.
No. It was just that the sentence that instead of discussing and delving into issues in terms of the substance, in terms of understanding the intricacies of an issue, we basically, choose the short exit out, which is labeling, you know. Oh, he's fascist, he's this, he's that, and so on and so on. He's leftist, he's socialist. Whatever it is, however label we are using, that labeling clearly shows we are not comfortable with discussing issues in depth, with substance. And when you label people and you order people to be quiet because that bothers you, that says a lot in terms of your own insecurity about the issues. I remember during this last election, somebody saying, we should not even criticize or talk about Islam. Why not? Who has said so? Who are you to tell us what we should talk about? In fact, it's this lack of discussion that has led us to generalities and these fictional adjectives and so on and so forth. There is no topic that is beyond discussion. Every topic needs to be discussed. And that is, I think, what we learned from Hannah Arendt. That is a true democracy. It's a society where there is fearless discussion and debate about each and every issue.
And the control of language is, as she said, part of a totalitarian control.
Absolutely.
Let's get George on the line. George, thanks for holding, sir. You're on Talk Back on the Talk Back Book Club. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. So much to say. I'll try to be quick, though, because of this short segment. Thanks for having this. This is great. University folks, educated folks speaking, and it's really great. I love education. I hope I can continue learning my whole life. I like that bumper sticker. If you think education's expensive, try ignorance. I got to find that bumper sticker.
All right.
But anyway, earlier we were talking about, you guys were talking about totalitarianism and having the family spy on you, I thought instantly, well, we all have a spy, and it's in our pocket. It's our smartphone that's listening to what we say. I'm sure many people out there know exactly what I'm talking about, where they talk about siding for the house, and the next thing they go on Facebook, and boom, here's advertisements for siding. And it's like, how does this happen?
What a coincidence.
So, yeah. And so I think everybody's experienced that. So that brings me to Google and Apple and all these gigantic corporations, and they're kind of intermingling with the government. And I think we need to look at that Citizens United case and maybe overturn that, because relationships is true, Jeff. That's what we do need. And if you have the corporations in the middle and censoring, isn't that part of the totalitarianism?
All right, thanks for the call, sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to say that Citizens United needs to be overturned. And I mentioned it earlier, that Graham Plattner in Maine running for Senate. Listen to that guy a couple times, and it's stunning what that guy's saying. And anyway, Citizens United needs to be overturned, because we need these relationships. Because if we start getting the computers and the AI making all the decisions for us, we're screwed. It's a bigger money, and we can't compete with that.
Thank you for the call, sir. Gentlemen, your thoughts.
Well, the point about Google and Apple is a very good one, and it is frightening. They're not bound by the First Amendment. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. It doesn't say people can't be jackasses. And in the case of Google and Apple coordinating with the Biden administration, whether it was about COVID or whether it was about reproductive issues or these other things, that's really getting into very scary territory. And that's something that the First Amendment does block.
or shot.
And I have to say about this AI, this is a very excellent point, I think. I have a very good friend in California, and he sent me something, and it was very interesting. And he said, you know, I didn't actually write it. I actually put a few adjectives and a couple sentences, and AI wrote the essay for me. Now, this was a political discussion. He wanted to analyze something. He wanted me to look at it and so on and so forth. It's pretty scary, I told him, that you haven't done the research. You haven't actually decided where to look, what books to look, what to look at, what sources, what archival material, whatever is available. Somebody else, some other system, decided for you what is reliable as a source of information. That's what scares me about this AI, that it actually chooses what sources you have to go there, you have to go to, in order to formulate your own opinion. So this system actually wrote an opinion piece based on a few sentences my friend had given it. And that is quite scary, I think. That is the availability to the ability to think and the availability of information being actually analyzed and decided on by something beyond our own mind and our own rational capability.
And it also is depends on who's putting stuff into that, because people may recall that Google's first attempt to come up with something opposite ChatGPT, when you presented an idea that it didn't like or you disagreed with it, it insulted you. It called you a Nazi, and then it threatened to destroy your reputation.
Wow.
Where do you think it learned that?
Yeah,
and you know, this is the thing. AI actually creates the illusion that it is objective, but in fact, because there is a person behind it,
gentlemen,
there is a bias.
We're running out of time. We're going to come right back. 721-1290, 406 721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. This is the Talk Back Book Club, which will continue into the final section when we come back after this quick timeout. So please, we'd love to have you stay with us and complete the program. Hey, if you're waking up.
Women experience unique life stages such as pregnancy or menopause that can increase their risk of developing cardiovascular disease over the course of their lifetime.
But here's the good news. Women have the best resource. We have each other.
Visit goredforwomen.org today to learn more.
Hey, we're back on Talk Back. The Talk Back Book Club rolling right along and coming to our final segment here. And we're going to try to get as many calls in as we can before we run out of time. And Harry, you're up first. Go ahead. Just state your point, please.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, first off, I agree with giving people labels like anti-Semitic is another label they want to use. Trump derangement syndrome, another label to shut down any argument. But Myrdad was talking about how, you know, people are censoring themselves, but I think that's been going on forever. I mean, you go back Jim Crow South, you couldn't talk anything about black rights. Earlier you couldn't talk about anything disparaging to the church or Christianity. I mean, that was a sure way to shut down any, get rid of it, you know, you lose your social standing or lose your jobs. So, I mean, this has been ongoing. During the First World War, you couldn't just talk about disparage the war. I mean, that was the government doing that. They throw you in jail. So, I mean, this has been ongoing. Sinead O'Connor, she tore up a picture of the Pope, and her career went downhill. So, I mean, this has been ongoing. But also, I'm wondering, in this book, did she talk about anti-Semitism? The far cause, I personally think, is, especially European anti-Semitism, is Christianity. I mean, Martin Luther wanted synagogues burned. I mean, and all the way through the Crusades, they were killed the Jews as much as the Muslims. So, I mean, does she go into that? And, I mean, that to me, that's the biggest base cause of anti-Semitism.
Thank you.
Especially now. But, I mean, Muslim came later on. But this this was really the base of most of the anti-Semitism.
All right, thanks for the call. Gentlemen, let's keep going with the calls. This is Dave. Dave, good morning. You're on. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I like to speak to it. I'm a critic of the administration, Trump administration, but I'm more than willing to debate that issue with anyone. But I have been called lots of names, and I think I've been called a traitor, too, at times. But I would like to suggest a book for you. The next book for you to put on the radio would be, it's by Omar Bar-Tov, and it's called Israel, What Went Wrong? And I think it would be a good book to discuss the Israeli situation. And I'd like to put a word in for that.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's continue on. Catherine's up. Catherine, go ahead, please.
Good morning. I wanted to mention that when you control language, you can control thought. So suppression of certain types of language and words undermines the ability over time of the mind to form concepts and ideas, leading to the abolition of even the ability to analyze the world around a person, which turns people basically into ciphers. And there's a couple of books that are really good at looking at how this goes, and one of them is Anthem by Ayn Rand, and the other one is Brave New World by Huxley. Anyway. Thank you
for the call. Gentlemen, we have about 3 minutes left in our time.
I just quickly put in also Orwell's 1984 in terms of language. I think one of the things that I forget if it was Harry or Dave raised about the about anti-Semitism, one of the points that Hannah Arendt makes and other analysts have is that there was a different kind of anti-Semitism that emerged. Rather than the kind described, you know, whether it's the Crusades or other earlier forms of anti-Semitism, the original late 19th, early 20th century associated with race and racism, which Arendt linked to imperialism. But we're really close to out of time, and I want to make sure we get to the next book.
Yes, sir.
Which is next month we're talking about Jan Dutkiewicz and Gabriel Rosenberg. It's spelled Dutkiewicz and Gabriel Rosenberg, Rosenberg. The title is Feed the People. And the subtitle is Why Industrial Food is Good and How to Make it Better. It's published by Basic Books.
Wow, how about that? I'm hungry already. Hey, gentlemen, I just want to say thank you to both of you for taking all, and for all of you listening statewide on the Talkback, Montana Talkback Radio Network. We do this all the time, and we'd love to have you call and be a part of it. That's what it's all about. Our phone numbers are 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. So, Mirdad, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you, Nick. It's always a pleasure and indeed a privilege to be on your show.
You bet. And Michael Mayer.
Thanks very much. We really appreciate it. And we appreciate the audience calling in.
Yeah, and we love the questions. And obviously, a lot of the folks have read these books. And we love to have that intellectual get-together to talk about a great book. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mike, how many years has it been?
It's coming
now?
Out. It'll be 4 years in September.
Wow. And how many books?
September will be the 49th, and October will be our 50th book.
Wow.
Amazing.
It's a lot of books.
That's almost as old as me.
It's older than me. But anyway, for tomorrow's show, the first half hour, we're going to do open phones 8 to 8:30, and then 8:30 to 9, it'll be Montana GOP Chairman Art Wittig, and then from 9 to 10, it'll be James Brown, our state auditor and insurance commissioner, all of them ready to take your calls.
You bet. I love having James Brown on. He's a kick in the pants, and he always answers questions right from the hip. So we appreciate all the folks who come on our show to share their views and thoughts, and of course, their professional expertise as well. Have yourselves a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning, bright and early, at 8 o'clock for another edition of Talk Back. Till then, have a great day.